Okay, Gemara now. So the Gemara in Gimel Amud Aleph says, Tanya, this I know you've done. So Amar Rabbi Yossi, Pam Achar Hayiti Mahalech Baderech. Rabbi Yossi says, I was once walking on the way. V'nichnasti l'churva achat mi'churvot Yerushalayim l'hitpalel. And I once reached a ruin of Jerusalem to pray. Ba Eliyahu zachur latov shamar li ala petach. Eliyahu of blessed memory came and guarded the doorway. V'himtinli at shetziyamti tefilati, and he waited until I finished davening. La'achar shetziyamti tefilati, after I finished davening, amar li shalom alecha Rebbe, says, how are you, my teacher? V'amarti lo shalom alecha Rebbe umori. And I said to him, right, how are you, my teacher, my master? V'amar li, and now he switches. Okay, fine. Bini, my son. Okay, there is a little bit of a fun power dynamic going on there, right? Rebbe, no, you're Eliyahu Hanavi, Rebbe Umori. Fine, Bini. Okay, here, you got it. Fine. V'pnei manichnas l'chor vazu. Why did you go into this ruin? Amar ti lo l'hitpalel. I said, to pray. V'amar li, oh, by the way, can you send a two-line summary, what you think the tamtzit of your shir is, to Rai Wasserman for Megal Moments. I already sent pictures. I got good pictures of you. Okay? Yeah. Anyways. And so, okay. V'amar li. And he says, Bini. And then I want the recording. You recorded it, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So send it to me. Bini. Bibnei ma nech. So I can catch what I didn't get. Bibnei ma nechnas to l'chor vazu. Why'd you go in? Amar tilo lihit palel to David. V'amar li. He said to him, you should have davened on the path. I was worried that the people who were walking were going to interrupt me. V'amarli said, okay, so you should have davened the abbreviated tefila, which the Gemara will later tell you is Havinenu. At that time I learned three things from Eliyahu. You shouldn't go into a ruin. And that you can daven on the path. And if you do, you should daven the abbreviated tefillah. So then he continues. And he said, Bini, ma kol shamata b'chor bazu. What voice did you hear in this ruin? And I said to him, shamati bat kol sheminahemet kiyona ve'omeret. I heard a bat kol, a divine voice, whatever that means, cooing like a dove. And it said, Oy libanim sheba avanodeim echarafti et beiti visarafti et echali viglitem levenu mois. Right? Woe is to my children that because of their sins, I had to destroy my house, and I had to burn my temple, and I had to exile them to the nations. The Amar li and Eliyahu told me, Chayacha, I swear, by your life and your head. Lo sha'azu bilvado merit kach. It's not only when you go in that you heard it. Elo b'chol yom v'yom. Every day. Shalosh pa'amim merit kach. Three times a day. Belozu bilvad. Elo. Not only three times a day. Bishash Yisrael nichnasin levate knesiot levate midrasha. Every time the Jews go into shul. V'onin yehei shmei ha'godol mivoyrach. HaKadosh Baruch Hu menaneya roishoy, God nods his head. And I don't think today we're going to get to the other Gemara in which this happens, right? Which is much even weirder than this Gemara. The Omer, Ashrei HaMelech Shemekalzen Ozo Beveito Kach. Praiseworthy or lucky is the king who is praised in his house such. Mal Olaav Sheiglad Banav, but oi to the father who had to exile his children, va'oylehem labanim shegalu me'al shulchan avihem. And woe to the children who were exiled from their father's table. Okay? That's the Gemara. Okay? What I want to do is share two or three perushim on it. Okay? One by Yonah Frankel. Probably, if we have time, I assume we will, by Rav Kook, and one by, I think, one second, Menachem Katz, I think was his name. But I will, yeah. Okay, But before I do that, so, someone want to tell me, what is this Gemara about? Right? What, you look at this Gemara, what do you start thinking? What is it about? What is the message? Where do we even look methodologically? How do we read this Gemara? What do we do?
Obviously, it's not about tefillah.
Okay. That wasn't quite the assertion. It's about tefillah. Okay, good. You tell me, what does that mean? It's about tefillah. In what way is it about tefillah? Where do you see the power of tefillah?
Because by when they daven, Hashem says, whatever the last part.
Okay, good. So part of it is the power of tefillah. Okay. Now, methodologically, what Josh is doing is he assumes that all of this is leading towards a conclusion. Okay? Might be. Right? One way of reading it is that it's leading to a conclusion, and therefore what's the purpose of the dialogue? To push us towards that conclusion. Right? But there's always the possibility that when you have a dialogue like this, it's not just that, right? It's not necessarily presenting one perspective. What is it doing? It's presenting two perspectives, at least, right? That are in conversation, right? That's what, so the conversation, it still might be that it's favoring one at the end, right? Okay. What? Okay, good. So there's definitely some derivative lessons here about tefillah, right? Which is, don't go into a ruin, right? Which then the Gemara says, well, why not, right? That's the next line after this whole thing. It was, why not, right? Yes, then the Gemara says, well, why not? And it doesn't just say, well, Eliyahu said not to, right? Right, it says, you know, right? Because people will think you are meeting up with a prostitute or someone, right? It might fall on you. Good advice, don't go in a building, might collapse. Very good advice. I endorse that message, right? Don't go into a building that might collapse on you. Umibnamazikin, and because demons. Okay, don't go into a building that's likely to collapse on you. Okay, all of them might. Old rickety buildings that look like they're about to collapse on you, probably avoid more.
It also seems like from the beginning, he's part of the power of the brings Eliyahu down to teach him something by davening with
davening. Sure. On the other hand, Eliyahu also seems to come to tell him off. So is the lesson, tefillah is really powerful, or davening in a chorba is a really bad, and you need Eliyahu to come and, you know, smack you around a bit.
He didn't say that it was necessarily, like, you're not allowed to do that. He said it's better if he would have davened having him on the road.
Okay, good. Right? So there are definitely some localized, lesson here in terms of tefillah. Very good, yeah. Okay. Okay, good, right? Going alone, right? That's definitely central to it, as the Gemara will say in the next line, right? Which is, right, going alone, that may depend, right? If it's going to fall, it doesn't matter if you go with other people, so you all die. That's not great, right? But if it's about chashad, less so, right?
Also, isn't this Gemara, like, connected to what we were saying, like, the Gemara previously about Hashem answering, like, I think it was, like, the middle of the night where he says this?
So this doesn't seem to be in the middle of the night, but...
No, but isn't it like an echo of that kind of, like, saying it's a softer version of what he says then?
Meaning what?
It's, I'm going to be such a small question. I'm going to say, I love all of the Shemesh,
but I wish it could come from Shemesh, 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 Shemesh,
Shemesh, Shemesh, Shemesh, Shemesh, Shemesh, Shemesh, Shemesh, there is like a lion, here it's like a dove, here's like a softer echo of that.
Oh, you mean that? Yeah, no, for sure, right? These ideas come up several times in this parak, right? In terms of the way in which God mourns. Yeah.
But again, I also had the number 3 by it, which is interesting.
Yeah, right, 3, I mean, that 3 also tends to be one of those numbers that like...
comes up a lot.
Right, like 3, 7, 400, right? Like when you see those numbers, you're like, it could be, or it could be, you know, because it's 3, and it's like... You know, I an article popped up. I have not read it, but I guess it was like the Jewish Week wrap up. I'm not really sure. I get like these emails. Forget what it is. But like the title was like, there's some like anonymous donor to CUNY or something apparently, and now everyone's trying to figure out who it is because they're convinced it's a Jew, because he gave $180,000, and they're like, oh, it must be a Jew. They're probably right. I mean, you know, And then when I was in Rambam, the mock trial coach came in once, and he's like, he had just finished a court case, and he's like, after they settled the case, he said he just like burst out laughing in the middle of the courtroom, and the judge just didn't get it because it was an inside joke. What happened? He said both sides were Chabad. Right, and they finally agreed to settle on $770,000. He's like, so all the Jews was like, right? He just like it was hysterical, right? Like the judge had no idea why this was like funny, but like you know, symbolic numbers, you know, yeah. So, so what I want to do is focus on three perspectives here, and. Specifically ones that are not just going to focus on one lesson, but are going to focus on the dialogue. Right now, again, Josh could be right that the end of the day, Eliyahu gets the final word and he's the lesson, right? But to get that, you do need to analyze the dialogue, okay? Yeah. So I will be fair that of the three, the one I found in this particular case the least compelling for me was Ruf Cook's. I think it's very interesting, but Yonah Frankel's, I thought, is fascinating. The addition I had from Katz was I was very taken by. I'll give you briefly Rav Cook's and then maybe we'll come back to it, okay? So Rav Cook and Einaya, yeah, what do you want to say? Do you want me to start with Einaya? Should I start with the other ones? And then if I have time, we'll get to. You know, the thing is also you do a lot of Einaya, right? Because Sklar does Einaya, yeah. Right? Like I'll say that. Did he do this one, the Einaya? No? Okay. I'll start, make sure the ones that I really, again, Ruf Cook is fascinating here. But, you know, a lot of these things, it's what's meaningful, you know, it's what strikes you as meaningful. To me, I happen to find these two other Perushim really quite striking. So I wanted to share them. If we can, we'll do Ruf Cook also. Okay, so let me start with Yonah Frankel. Okay, so Yonah Frankel wrote many books on Agadah. A bit more academic, but many books on Agadah. I was trying to get my hands on this piece. Shout out to Rabbi Alex Israel who sent it. Rabbinic listservs are good for certain things. Getting the card are very helpful. I like emailed that. I need the source. And, like 5 minutes later, I had like a PDF of it. It was great. One day, Zach will be on one of these listservs. I need sources on Emunah Pshuta. You know, I have a 200-page. You know. Yeah.
Is it possible that, like...
We're very proud of it.
Is it possible that the conversation going on...
He doesn't realize that in 10 years from now, it's going to be 2,000 pages.
Yeah. Is it possible that the conversation that was going on is about, like, how a muster works? And that, like, first, like there's two options where you could go. You could be coming from a Hobbitian, or you could be from, like, a...
Oh, I mean, you definitely... Look, there are many possibilities, right? It could be that part of it is how you tell people off. Right here, Elio is like... Even though he's telling him off, he like waits there. He's respectful.
Yeah, but
it's possible. For sure. I think you could definitely derive lessons about how you tell. For sure. Okay. So first, though, I want to share you with Yonah Frankel's. Okay, because I really do. I like it a lot. Okay. So, Frankel notes that there are three things that drive his commentary. Okay? One, the Gemara never explains why, of all places, Rabbi Yossi went to a Chorba. Okay? Right? That seems to be central here, because, right? Rabbi Yossi says, well, I didn't want to daven on the road, but he was clearly going towards a churva, right? Or going around the Chorvot Yerushalayim, right? There's something, right? He's like, I don't want to be on the road. But there does seem to be something about him wanting to be there. And in fact, much of the drama happens because it seems to be Chorvot Yerushalayim, right? Eliyahu comes and tells him, like a chiddush, you think you only heard it before about Yerushalayim, but no, no, no. You really would hear that in a shul, right? So it does seem to be that there is a centrality to it that you need to explain. The second point is that why the bat kol in the first stage of the Gemara doesn't really get an explanation, right? And the third thing is what is Eliyahu doing there so early, right, in the story? Right? Like, what would the story have been missing if Eliyahu would have come later to tell him not go into the Chorva rather than being there at the beginning of the story to guard the door, to make sure that he, from what? Right? Remember, he went into the Chorva to not be interrupted. So what is Eliyahu doing there? Right? It sounds like Eliyahu is trying to be there to engage a dialogue. Right? Like, the story seems to be, right, the way he says is that Eliyahu is specifically wants to have a dialogue, and something about Chorva Yerushalayim, not just Chorva, but a Chorva Yerushalayim, right, essential to the story. Okay? Yes, yeah, this is Rachel Dav Gibel. Now, he says, right, that there's also a tension in this Gemara, because what is Rabbi Yossi's stated goal of why he ended up in... You know, not on the road, right? Except what's the problem? He says, I was walking on the road, right? That road where there are Chorvot Yerushalayim, right? Like, on the one hand, I didn't want to be on the road. But on the other hand, like, what are you doing here of all places, right? Like, it's a little bit of a weird place unless that's somehow part of the story. And he says, right, similarly, the Eliyahu point, which is, again, if Eliyahu was only there to tell him off, so he should have showed up at the end, right? The fact that Eliyahu spends time there while, you know, hovering, you know, indicates that, like, he's not just telling him off, right? That him being Bechorvat Yerushalayim is part of this story. And that's why Eliyahu is there, right, for the whole story. Now, of course, he said another Stira, which we already noted for, which you have to deal with, which is the Bini Rebbe Umori, which is very odd, right? Where it's Rebbe Umori, Bini. Right? Is Eliyahu, who's Rebbe, right? Like, this gets very, very complicated. Okay. So, with all of this, Frankel looks at the story. Yes, go. Sure.
Well, I always say that since Eliyahu was there at the beginning of the story, so it's obviously, you know, it was obviously to teach Yossi something all the way from there. So I want to try to go two bridges with one stone here and say, like, if he was putting himself in the to, like, pass by all these dangerous buildings. So the fact that Eliyahu was there from the beginning, guarding him from the buildings, so like, yeah, like, what are you doing here? Why are you putting yourself into a position that, like, someone would need a...
Good. So what you're pointing is on is just the Chorva, right? Not Chorva Yerushalayim, but Chorva, right? Right? Not specific Yerushalayim, which is fine, right? Part of the story clearly is about that, right? That's the halachic lessons that the Gemara derives later. But you're right. Now, but Frankel adds one more point that I think is very interesting here, right? Before we get to his interpretation. But another point to notice is that, just methodologically, you might be very tempted when you read this story to get tricked into thinking that he went in to hear the boss call. But that's clearly wrong. He went into Davin, and that happened to happen. Right, and if you want to understand the story, you need to understand both of those, which is what was he doing and what actually happened. Right, those aren't the same. Right, and that requires analysis in the story. Right, because you need to figure out what Yerushalayim was thinking. Right, but also what happened. Okay, so Here's what he says. He argues that that Rabbi Yossi was specifically going to daven b'churvot Yerushalayim. Why churvot Yerushalayim? He was mourning, right? The simplest reason going to churvot Yerushalayim to daven is to mourn. Maybe daven that the Beit HaMikdash should be rebuilt or something, but fundamentally, to mourn, right? And part, right, the tefillah was part of the expression. That's why you go into churvot Yerushalayim of all places.
Was it possible it was like Tisha B'Av or something?
I mean, who knows, right? It doesn't sound like it. It sounds like it's a regular day, right? But whatever it is, he seems to be going into a to daven there.
But then the question is, why did he say that to Eliyahu and not to Eliyahu? We asked why he was there.
Ah. So, you're right, right? You could say, well, why is he not saying it? But what would indicate that this might be true?
Because of what the Basel
says. Exactly, right? Meaning the Eliyahu, right, the God responds at some level with this Basel, which is mourning, right? Which does seem to indicate that that was part of why Rabbi Yossi is there. So what Frankel argues is that that's what, right, that's part of what he's doing. He believed that as an individual, right, it focuses really on, so he says, first of all, he's going into a churva. He divides it first. He's going into a churva to mourn. And specifically to avoid people, right? It's very clear, in fact, that the what is the one thing we do know. Why does he go into there? He doesn't want it to be distracted by people. Right? Meaning, it's right. He argued that it's not just that he happened to be on the path. It's he's going to Churva not just because he was on the path, but because he wanted to avoid people in general. Right? He wanted to mourn. So he wanted to be alone. Right? So he went into Churva, and specifically, he was looking towards the past. He was mourning Yerushalayim. Ah. So, exactly. So, Rabbi Yossi, therefore, is presenting a very past-oriented view of Judaism, right? How does he think? What does he think the proper response is to the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash? Is to look to the past and to mourn and to cry, right? So he goes into Churvot Yerushalayim and he does that, right? And then what does he say? Eliyahu says, "What did you hear?" And what does he say? So he said, "I heard God. What did you hear?" Right? So he said, I heard the boss call. And what did the boss call say? So God said, woe to my children, for whose sins I destroyed my house, burned my temple, and exiled them among the nations. The boss call reflects Rabbi Yossi's view. Right? Rabbi Yossi goes into mourning Yerushalayim. He's not expecting God to respond, but he does hear God respond. And what does he hear God responding?
Mourning.
Oy vey, right? The Beit HaMikdash is destroyed. Da, 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 da. And therefore, at some level, if he went in to mourn, what is the Baskal allowing him to do? Yeah, right. It's allowing him to partake of mourning with the Shechina, right? It's reciprocating. You want to mourn with me? I'll mourn with you. And what does Eliyahu do to him? It's what does Eliyahu say?
Saying that if you were doubting, your soul was a good accomplice.
So Eliyahu says, you have the wrong perspective on life. He says, you think that the only place to properly channel Churban Habayit is to go to Churvot Yerushalayim? You think that's the only place you're going to hear God, right? No. Every time you go to shul, and what is a shul in Chazal's idea, in Chazal's mind? Mikdash Ma'at, right? Based on the right, in the pasuk, as you'll see later on Daf Yomi for those doing Megillah. You go to Churvot Yerushalayim, but Eliyahu retorts, but you know what? You think that the only remnant of the Beit HaMikdash is in the past, but you know what there is? There's a Mikdash Ma'at in the present, and every time a Jew goes in, specifically when, with a tzibur, when they can say Amen Yehishmei Rabba, right? Anytime, three times a day in every shul, and anytime you go into a shul and there's a minyan. Right? Remember, if we said, if Rabbi Yossi is trying to avoid people, listen to what Eliyahu says to him. You're trying to avoid people to go to Chorobot Yerushalayim near God. Don't you know that if you went into any shul and there was a minyan and you said Yehishmei Rabba, right, you would get a response from God? And what would God say? What would God say? Yes. God says, is God sad about the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash? He is. But he's also happy. Right? He says, I'm not denying that it's sad. I'm not denying that it's sad. But that's not the whole story. Right? That's not the whole story. Right? And he says, Eliyahu says two things. That God, three times every day, says this. Now, what is that? What is it? It could just be three is random, but more likely, what is three here? What's the symbolism of three? We daven three times a day, right? So he says, three times a day, just like we daven, God says this. And every single time we get into a shul with a tzibur, God does this. And it's different than you. Yes, he's mourning, but he's also happy in the present. So what Frankel argues is that there's several axes that Rabbi Yossi represents, first of all, in Avoda Ava Yachid, right? That the way you daven is in private, by yourself. And Eliyahu says, don't you understand you get more of a response from God with a minyan, with a community, right? Rabbi Yossi looks towards the past and says, the way I daven is by mourning and looking past the Chorvot Yerushalayim. And Eliyahu says, I mean, that's great. Chorvot Yerushalayim, it is sad the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, but God is also happy with his Mikdash Ma'at. Right? He also celebrates the present and the future. And you're missing that. And then, what does he say? And he says, look, even though God's house is burnt, when the Jews come to the shul to praise him, he still has another house. His main house is built, but there's still, right, there is a remnant. What are you talking about? What do you mean he's not happy?
It says that after the destruction of everything, God no longer was in the sky.
Yeah. That he doesn't play. No, he doesn't play, right? What that Gemara means is very complicated. We did that 3 years ago in Agadata. That was a very weird Gemara. I can send that to you. It's a very weird Gemara, but it's specifically play. You have to be careful with it. It's not just happy, it's play. He plays with the male Leviathan, but not female, because it's wrong for people to play with women. I kid you not, that's what Gemara says. I don't know what you want from me, right? Like, sure. No, he killed the female because you don't play with females. God's schedule of the day.
One second.
I'm not finished. Right? He adds another one. And he says, he reads symbolically the path as well. Right, which is you davened in the Chorobah. Where should you have davened? On the path. Right, what is a path? What is the imagery of a path?
Moving forward.
Right?
But you're not going to hear a boskel when you're on the path.
He wasn't trying to hear a boskel, he was trying to daven.
I know, I'm saying, it seems like Eliyahu is having said it's better than if you were to daven on the path. But on the path, he wouldn't have heard the boskel.
Correct, it still would have been better. Right, and Eliyahu is saying you should have davened on the path. That's exactly the point. That's fine. Because that's exactly the point. Because what is the baskol? Right, the baskol for him is just, right, sanctioning the idea that you're mourning and looking at the past in this private, you know, whatever. Right, and Eliyahu says, no, I'd rather you be on a path. Right, I'd rather you be looking forward. And yeah, what's he saying? I'd rather you not hear that Boskal. You know what Boskal I want you to hear? He's like, yes, you happen to go in, and there was one Boskal there. You know where else there's a Boskal? Every time you go into shul, if you manage to get yourself in shul, right, and actually live in the present and the future, and not in the past, then you would also hear the Boskal. You're right. I'd rather you learn in the past. But you know where else I'd even more rather you be? With a community in shul, where God is saying, yes, I'm sad the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, but...
So
Tila Katsara does seem to be connected more to the, right? I mean, there are multiple levels to this, right? Which is, well, on the path, I'm going to be distracted. There is the lower halachic level, right? There is the more literal halachic level where he's saying, okay, you want to dive on the path? Okay, I'll solve your local problem. Okay, say daven quickly, right? Right? But there's also a symbolic level, right? Which is, right now, the interesting thing is obviously the halachic part you can take, both as the local halachic lessons, but also symbolically, that at that moment I learned, don't go into a churva, right? That moment I learned that it's better to daven a path and daven short, right? Meaning there is a certain, right? Because at the end of the day, it's not just who's right. Meaning Rabbi Yossi is saying, I learned from Elio, certain halachot, so he's acquiescing to this worldview that, right, that he's, now, there is, and he thinks that central to the story also is the fact that Eliyahu is waiting for him there, right? Why is he waiting for him there? And this comes back to Josh's point. But he wouldn't have heard the Boskal. You're right. And that's why Eliyahu is not coming in and dragging him out, right? Meaning, if Eliyahu had either come only at the end to give him Musar, or had come at the beginning and dragged him out or stopped him going to Korva, right? Exactly. Meaning it's not that his perspective is wrong. It's Eliyahu saying, that is a perspective. I want you to hear the Boskal. You're right, you wouldn't have heard it. And that's why Eliyahu, in this particular case, keeps him safe and waits for him to experience that Boskal. To do what? To then teach him, that is one reality, but there's another reality that you're missing. So you're right. It's the irony. Eliyahu is saying, I'd rather you daven on the path, but he specifically didn't drag him out before he heard it. Meaning, he wants Rabbi Yossi to experience that so that he can tell him, but there's another world, right? There's another vision. Right, and that's really the, right, the... Right now, right, Frankl specifically focuses on the fact there seem to be these right, multiple levels in which the story is functioning, right? Right, on the one hand, where Eliyahu doesn't want him to do it, on the other hand, he does want him to do it, right, to learn from the lesson. And of course, right, he notes there's also this, right, this play, right? Where on the other hand, right, Eliyahu, right, how is Eliyahu at some point Rebbe, right, calls Rabbi Yossi Rebbe and then switches to Bini? Well, he says, listen, Eliyahu is playing a part as if he doesn't know why Rabbi Yossi is going in there because he wants to hear Rabbi Yossi teach him the lesson, right? And then what does he want to do? Flip it on him and say, you're thinking about this wrong. So what does he say? First, he calls him Rebbe, right? Oh, you went in. What did you hear, right? And then he says, okay, now let me teach you the truth, right? Bini, right? I know more than you, right? There is a truth that you have, but let me tell you what you're missing in this story, right? He's saying, you're right, there is a Boskal there, there is something to be gained, but you're missing something. And Eliyahu obviously is greater in this sense than Rabbi Yossi. So this is Frankl's, right? He goes through more details, but his main analysis here is that, again, that the axis is two-pronged, right? One is Rabbi Yossi celebrates the avodah of the Yachid, and Eliyahu says, but you're missing the avodah of the tzibur, which is tied up with Rabbi Yossi's belief that the primary avodah post-Horban is looking back to the past in mourning. And Eliyahu is saying, but there's still hope, right? There's still a future. There's still a mikdash in community, in shul. There's still a present. There's still a future, right? And you are focusing on that. And yes, there's a Boskal there. There's spirituality there. There's a truth there. But you're missing the dimension. When Rabbi Israel sent this to me, he just put a one-liner to me. that it's a great piece to talk about in terms of the return to shul post, you know, street minyanim, right? That at the one hand, right, certain people are like, well, I really liked it, right? The smaller minyanim, not in shul, not with the big community. And there is a beauty there, right? But there's also a beauty in shul, in those spaces, right? With the full community, right? There is that element too, right? And that people sometimes miss it, right? Yeah. Okay, so that's Frankel's. Menachem Katz, I thought, he has a very long article, but I just want to pick out one analysis here. And that is that he thinks that another central point here is the machlokes between Rabbi Yossi and Eliyahu. What was the real tragedy of the Korban? And he notes, what does Rabbi Yossi say? How does Rabbi Yossi hear God's voice? Right, and what is God mourning?
The
destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. What does Eliyahu say God actually says? Right, it's oi to the father who had to kick out his children from his table. Now, part of that is that he destroyed the table, right? So he says also the Beit HaMikdash. But he says another thing, that Rabbi Yossi thinks that the primary tragedy of the Beit HaMikdash was the destruction of God's home. And Eliyahu says, no, the primary tragedy was now that God doesn't have a home, the relationship with his children has been affected, right? Which I thought is a very beautiful read of the different baskals, of the way Rabbi Yossi hears it and the way Eliyahu hears it. Say it again. Meaning what? Yeah, I mean, I assume in that sense, I don't know, I haven't thought about it too much. It could be, right? I don't know, right? The lion, I guess, is a stronger image. I'm not sure. I have to look around. I'm not sure. I'm sure, you know. Okay, I see we only have like 3 minutes. I don't want to cut into Dovi's share, so I'll just give you the Rashi Prakim of Rav Kook. Rav Kook actually really does read this entire Gemara is simply describing the tragedy and the unnatural religious world that exists post Korban. And the way he reads it is that the loss post Beis HaMikdash is expresses itself in three areas. One is in the way that the righteous act in the world, which is represented by Rabbi Yossi's tefillah. The loss of Avoda, which is represented by the 3 bas calls every day, and the loss in the general communal worship of the Jews, represented by Eliyahu's discretion. Right? He, unlike the way Frankel and Katz are reading, where they read it more as a dialogue, he thinks this Gemara is a unified meditation on what we lost post Beis HaMikdash. And he thinks that between the diminishment of the value of what tzaddikim are doing, the diminishment of communal worship, and the diminishment of the Beit HaMikdash, the conclusion is simply that we're disconnected from God. And therefore, the point of this is that only the holiest people like Rabbi Yossi, and, oh, right, Rav Kook does pick up on your point, is that only the holiest people like Rabbi Yossi can hear God, and even then, they only hear a faint echo of God's voice, and that's why it uses the dove. Right, that our connection has been severed so much that only the greatest tzaddik, when he goes into Chorban Yerushalayim, right, can hear a little bit of God's voice, right, sort of echoing there. And what Eliyahu is saying is not, unlike the way we've been doing it, that no, you're looking at it wrong, is saying you're only right at half a level, meaning it's true that there's a lack of connection between Jews and God, and therefore we can no longer hear God. What Eliyahu is saying is you're right, but just know that in truth, right, God is still nodding his head. He still cares about us, right? He still wants to be able to beg the Megash. He wants to value our actions. He wants to enable us. It's just that, right? So for Rav Kook, it's not Eliyahu versus Rabbi Yossi. It's Rabbi Yossi is the way we experience it. And Eliyahu is saying, you're right. That is how we experience it, of a loss of connection with God. But at a deeper level, up in God, right? God is still there and still wants that relationship. It's just not happening yet, right? That's sort of Cook's read of this Gemara in a nutshell, right? That's oversimplifying it, but it is 9 o'clock. And as much as I can cut into other Rebbeim's time, I cannot do that to Dovi. So...